The following, according to an order published at the end of the 17th century, were the measures to be taken when the plague appeared in a town.
Hope you guys are staying sane out there. Just left our house for the first time after probably 4 or 5 days now. And everything has gotten infinitely more weird, basically, out there.
First, a strict spatial partitioning, the closing of the town and its outlying districts.
Not going to bars, not going to restaurants. It all just means physical separation so that you have a space between you and others.
Prohibition to leave the town on pain of death. The division of the town into distinct quarters, each governed by an intendant. Each street is placed under the authority of a syndic, who keeps it under surveillance. If he leaves the street, he will be condemned to death. On the appointed day, everyone is ordered to stay indoors. It is forbidden to leave on pain of death. Each family will have made its own provisions.
Going into the freaking store, because we live in some new magical land where we can't just go to the store anymore. Now, we have to all wait in some stupid line, which actually doesn't really do anything to help with the situation at all. What it actually does is make us all have to stand next to each other longer.
And they've got signs everywhere with little icons of people with cards that say social distancing 6 feet with like an arrow. And so we go up to the thing and there's a bunch of carts sticking out right next to the entrance to this, you know, lamest Disneyland ride they've ever created. And Aaron takes a cart, and this middle-aged dude standing at the door starts screaming at us.
If it is absolutely necessary to leave the house, it will be done in turn, avoiding any meeting. Only the intendants, syndics, and guards will move about the streets.
The mayor is sending out a number, you can call it a tattle, on groups of people that you see in public. And people are calling it. People are tattling on other people for meeting in groups. So that's a thing now. We're at the see something, say something on crack level of things at this point.
It is a segmented, immobile, and frozen space. Each individual is fixed in his place. And if he moves, he does so at the risk of his life, contagion, or punishment.
Soap and water lather up at least 5 times a day.
Governor of Washington is using heat maps now, using people's cell phone data. If they're logged into a specific app, it's going to generate a heat map of where the people are at. So if you thought we were living in Minority Report before this happened, I'm not even sure what to call it now.
Inspection functions ceaselessly. The gaze is alert everywhere. A considerable body of militia and men of substance guards at the gates, at the town hall, and in every quarter to ensure the prompt obedience of the people and the most absolute authority of the magistrates. At each of the town gates, there will be an observation post. At the end of each street, sentinels. Every day, the intendant visits the quarter in his charge and inquires whether the syndics have carried out their tasks, whether the inhabitants have anything to complain of. They observe their actions. Every day, too, the syndic goes into the street for which he is responsible, stops before each house, and gets all of the inhabitants to appear at the windows. He calls each of them by name and informs himself as to the state of each and every one of them, in which respect the inhabitants will be compelled to speak the truth under pain of death. Everyone locked up in his cage, everyone at his window, answering to his name and showing himself when asked. It is the great review of the living and the dead. The surveillance is based on a system of permanent registration. At the beginning of the lockup, the role of each of the inhabitants present in the town is laid down, one by one. This document bears the name, age, and sex of everyone, notwithstanding his condition. A copy is sent to the intendant of the quarter, another to the office of the town hall, another to enable the syndic to make his daily roll call. Everything that may be observed during the course of the visits is noted down and transmitted to the intendants and magistrates. The magistrates have complete control over medical treatment. The registration of the pathological must constantly be centralized. The relation of each individual to his disease and to his death passes through the representatives of power, the registration they make of it, and the decisions they take on it. This enclosed, segmented space, observed at every point, in which the individuals are inserted in a fixed place, in which the slightest movements are supervised, in which all events are recorded, in which an uninterrupted work of writing links the center and periphery, in which power is exercised without division, according to a continuous hierarchical figure, in which each individual is constantly located, examined, and distributed among the living beings, the sick, and the dead. All this constitutes a compact model of the disciplinary mechanism. The plague is met by order.
I was talking with our UK colleagues just today who were saying, the UK is very similar to where we are now in outbreak because each of our countries have that independent spirit of we don't want to be told what to do. Well, I understand that, but now is the time to do what you're told.
We've been assured off and on for years now that if we aren't doing anything wrong, then we don't have anything to hide.
Eric Schmidt is Google's CEO.
If you have something that you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place.
It's a sentiment that's meant to devalue any concept we might still be holding on to of our good old-fashioned 20th century personal privacy in this 21st century augmented reality age of ever-present technology, surveillance, and data collection.
And here's how it works. There are 40 lampposts in this lot, holding 83 LED lights connected to 7 cameras in a seamless grid that is tracking and recording my every move.
But the nothing to hide, nothing to fear mentality actually comes straight out of a panopticon mindset, an authoritarian control system that rules through fear of being constantly watched, which British philosopher Jeremy Bentham spent 25 years of his life developing, which he personally described as a, quote, mode of obtaining power of mind over mind. The panopticon, which comes from the Greek words for all and seeing, began as an architectural concept for a prison, an inspection house built in a circular design with cells arranged on the outer wall around an inspection tower, which dominated the entire room from the center. The idea being that the inspector in the tower could look into any cell at any time, but the inmates could never see the inspector themselves, so they wouldn't know if or when they were personally being watched. The design even came complete with conversation tubes, an elaborate network set up for the inspector to be able to communicate with each prisoner. A sharp contrast to the dark dungeons of the past and the system that they would just throw people away in to keep them out of sight, out of mind, and forget about them for a time. In the panopticon system, constant visibility was key. To be constantly seen, to be constantly watched without seeing the watchers. The whole idea is pegged on a psychological theory that people will behave better when they believe they're being watched. Bentham wrote a list of what he believed would be the benefits of his panopticon. Morals reformed, health preserved, industry invigorated, instruction diffused, public burdens lightened, economy seated, as it were, upon a rock. The Gordian knot of the poor laws are not cut, but untied. All by a simple idea in architecture. In 2016, one of the most famous panopticons in the United States was finally shut down, the Stateville Correctional Center Roundhouse in Illinois, which was built in 1922 and it housed some 348 inmates at capacity. Some even sarcastically referred to it as a larger real-life Thunderdome from the sequel to Mad Max. A prison watchdog group called the John Howard Association even referred to it as a place not fit for human habitation, writing in an official statement that living and working conditions in this ill-conceived structure were inhumane and degrading for prisoners and staff alike, specifically calling out the panopticon design as, quote, universally deemed harsh, chaotic, and ineffective, and abandoned by correctional agencies throughout the world long ago, end quote, as it creates an environment damaging to not just the physical, but the mental health of the people inside of it. Conditions aside, the dysfunctional design of the roundhouse is perfectly engineered to induce extreme aggravation and anxiety and stress among inmates and staff.
One former inmate actually told me that this place is a hate factory.
The whole point of the Panopticon's design was to ingrain the inmates with an ever-present sense of self-discipline, to build itself inside their minds first as the power system became instilled within the individual's psyche, by inducing a conscious state of permanent visibility to ensure the automatic and continuous function of power over the individuals inside of it, by the ever-present knowledge that you could be watched, but without ever knowing with absolute certainty whether or not you actually were being watched. So it's kind of like the Schrodinger's cat of Orwellian hellscapes, basically. And this design wasn't limited only for use in penitentiaries, but could also be expanded to psychiatric asylums, hospitals, schools, and workshops. Anywhere could essentially be turned into a panopticon for the supposed betterment of society. In his book Discipline and Punish: The Birth of the Prison, Foucault called the panopticon a machine, the diagram of a mechanism of power reduced to its ideal form, a pure architectural and optical system, a figure of political technology that may and must be detached from any specific use. Whenever one is dealing with the multiplicity of individuals on whom a task or particular form of behavior must be imposed, the panoptic schema may be used. It is applicable to all establishments whatsoever. Foucault also referred to it as a laboratory of power and a privileged place for experiments on men, and for analyzing with complete certainty the transformations that may be obtained from them.
All right, ladies, listen up. Have you heard of cancel culture? Cancel culture is a growing trend on social media where people collectively decide someone is, quote, canceled. However, a recent blog on Study Breaks argues that cancel culture is actually toxic because it grows from the idea that people should be perfect and aren't allowed to make mistakes. Mm.
As the people inside the Panopticon are a constant source of information that's continuously feeding the system, however that system intends to use that information to alter and sway behaviors, it can and may be used to do so. In the age of omnipresent tech, we've seen the rise of the Panopticon once again, only this time, it has been extended to the whole of society in every sphere.
Technology.
People have been putting devices in their homes to spy on themselves, surveillance style. Things like Google Home and Alexa, which are always on, always listening, by design.
Alexa has been letting out a spontaneous and rather creepy laugh, completely unprompted.
Do you enjoy being a computer?
I don't have an opinion on that. Hey, Gabe.
What?
Do you enjoy being a human?
You can't go into a store like Walmart these days without eye-in-the-sky cameras or telescreens hanging down from the ceiling that are motion-activated to automatically begin recording you once you walk down an aisle.
Not only are you on a giant television screen as soon as you walk in, but each row has its own motion-activated screen to record you on if you want to buy something.
In fact, it was a couple years ago there was a video that got put out of a guy who took one of those cameras apart to show everyone that there was nothing actually inside of it but a battery powering a blinking red light to give the appearance of a security camera, where there actually wasn't one, which is very panopticon, because if you look at it, you think you're being watched, but you don't know for sure. We've seen Walmarts in our area that have these eye in the skies on aisles like the towel aisle next to the washcloths. I mean, is that something that, are people sticking towels down their pants and trying to escape with towels? Is that the big item for theft? Doesn't really make a lot of sense where some of these cameras are being placed. It's really just, it seems like it's just the idea of putting them everywhere so that you think they're everywhere, so that you're being watched all the time.
Well, maybe it's enough that we think we're constantly being watched.
City streets are being filled with cameras that are linked to fusion centers in major cities all over the place. And we're told it's only a matter of time before AI can be hooked into these fusion centers and
used sort of like Philip K. Dick's Minority Report to predict crime in areas before it happens. In London, there are signs reminding you every few paces that you are on CCTV for your safety, and they always make sure to let you know it's for your safety. And that's before you get to plans for satellites to just be constantly recording everything from lower Earth orbit all the time. The Panopticon's tentacles are slowly reaching out to every corner of our planet. But as I mentioned earlier, once these inspectors are installed, which in this case are the cameras, the AI, the server farms that form the basis of a modern Panopticon machine, whoever's running that system can decide how it uses its omnipresent surveillance apparatus to alter the people's behavior who live under it. So in England, for example, as the rise of the concept of hate speech and police now investigating what are called non-hate crime incidents.
And they've said, yes, this is our policy. So we are going to investigate non-crime if the incident is considered hateful.
To quote, check people's thinking.
Police officer said to this man, we had to investigate this because we need to check you are thinking properly. We need to check your thinking.
A story came out in 2023 of a 73-year-old retired social worker who was caught on a CCTV camera taking a picture of a sticker that said, keep males out of women-only spaces in West Yorkshire. And according to the reports, instead of investigating actual crimes that are happening in this area, which is an area that the Daily Mail said it has the second highest crime rate in the UK, at least at that time, with more than 90% of actual crimes going unsolved by official figures, they're over there knocking on the door of a 73-year-old retired social worker to check her thinking as to why she was seen on a CCTV camera taking a picture of a sticker that says, keep males out of women-only spaces. I think they wanted to correct my thinking, she was quoted as saying. I felt as if they were trying to gag a dissenting voice by harassing me in my own home. I mean, the takeaway here is, instead of police powers being used to solve crimes, which is supposed to be the purpose that police exist in the first place, they're now using a pervasive CCTV-powered panopticon to surveil the area's residents and investigate them for non-crimes, which they actually say are non-crimes, specifically to, quote, check their thinking. This is exactly the type of power of mind over mind that Jeremy Bentham proposed in his original panopticon design. And they're trying to make it so people aren't even allowed to opt out. If someone dares to cover their face because they feel like the facial recognition technology is a bit of an overreach, the police are stopping them and asking why, and trying to take their picture.
Is it your face?
Maybe it's because I don't consent to being on there.
Oh, right. Okay, why is that?
Because I think it's a bit of a government overreach.
Oh, right, okay. That's fine. Can we take your details down? Is that all right?
People now living in the UK can see very clearly how this system of omnipresent surveillance has been turned against them to try and enforce what are very unpopular political agendas. Because I'm sure when they originally put in these CCTV cameras everywhere, quote, for your safety, they didn't say, oh, and by the way, we're going to use them to surveil you doing things that aren't actually crimes, and then we're going to send police to your house to check your thinking. Because they want to modify people's behavior on a nationwide scale. I'm sure that if they had said that, there would have been a lot more resistance up front. But that's how this works. It's a machine. It's divorced from its purpose. So it can be put in for any number of justification, camel's nose under the tent, we're trying to keep you safe type of things. But here in America, we talk about that as trading liberty for security. And history has shown that doesn't normally end very well. And speaking of the U.S., Oracle CEO Larry Ellison has been back in the news lately. After he appeared alongside OpenAI CEO Sam Altman at the White House the day after Donald Trump's second inauguration to announce a new $500 billion AI infrastructure project. And while everyone was focused on the mention of new personalized treatments, it really couldn't be missed that Ellison, whose company Oracle's first customer was the Central Intelligence Agency, has been talking about us living in a panopticon without using that word for decades now.
Where do you come down on what NSA is doing? Actually, we've been collecting this information for so long, and long before NSA was collecting it. Let me tell you who was collecting it. American Express, Bank of America, Visa, all of your credit card data. We have all of your financial records. This whole issue of privacy is utterly fascinating to me. Who's ever heard of this information being misused by the government? In what way?
Well, I just hear you clearly. You're saying whatever the NSA is doing is okay with me.
It's great. It's great. It's essential. By the way, President Obama thinks it's essential. It's essential if we want to minimize the kind of strikes that we just had in Boston.
Not even weeks after 9/11, Ellison was in the news, having already met with the CIA and the FBI, calling for a biometric national ID. It says the card would contain basic information, including the social security number of the person, and be linked to a federal database that would contain detailed personal data, such as digital records of the person's thumbprint, their palm print, their face, or their eyes, or possibly all of it. And this was also being pushed at the time by Alan Dershowitz. So Ellison was in here even offering to donate, derisive air quotes, the software for this program.
But what point would it be alarming for you in terms of government surveillance? At what point would your red line be crossed?
If the government used it to do political targeting, if the Democrats used it to go after Republicans, if the Republicans used it to go after Democrats.
More recently, just a few months back, he was talking about how we're all going to have to get used to being watched all the time.
The police will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording, watching and recording everything that's going on. Citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on. And it's unimpeachable. The cars have cameras on them. We have a squad car here someplace. But those kind of applications using AI, if we can use AI, and we're using AI to monitor the video.
He might not be using the word, but the thing that he is drooling over here is the idea of a panopticon.
Not people that are looking at those cameras. It's AI that's looking at the cameras. No. You can't do this. We're gonna have supervision.
It may be employed differently. It may be a lot more invisible than the physical architecture of the thing itself, but
we're gonna have supervision.
He's talking about the machine of the panopticon.
Thank you, Mr. President.
And it feels like this is why the 21st century here in America was kicked off with the most blatant version of this idea put right in everybody's face when they came out with the Total Information Awareness and the All-Seeing Eye logo. Again, the word panopticon, based on the Greek for all and seeing, just being shoved right in the public's face with that All-Seeing Eye logo. And of course, they knew people would be horrified by that idea. But it's kind of like setting up a goalpost. So if you show somebody the worst possible, most egregious version of something, like, oh no, not that. But then if you slowly bring it in by paces over time, gradually under the auspices of corporations rather than the government, it's something people would be a lot more likely to accept. And they have, largely they have. I mean, look around. We're still going to end up in the same place. We're still ending up with total information awareness.
You'll only achieve that if you can get substantial data in the right databases, use AI to interrogate that.
Giants are announcing the formation of Stargate. So put that name down in your books, because I think you're going to hear a lot about it in the future. A new American company that will invest $500 billion at least in AI infrastructure in the United States.
The I'm not doing anything wrong, so I don't have anything to hide refrain is little more than a bait and switch at best. It not only fails to take into account that once the system's in place, its use can be altered to whatever those at the helm of the machine see fit, whatever behavior they want to modify, but it also ignores a world where, for just one example, economic data can be used to manipulate the entire system to benefit the few over the many.
We need to see unemployment rise. Unemployment has to jump 40-50% in my view
We need to see pain in the economy. We need to remind people that they work for the employer, not the other way around. It's a dynamic that has to change. We've got to kill that attitude, and that has to come through hurting the economy, which is what the whole global, you know, the world is trying to do. The governments around the world are trying to increase unemployment to get that to some sort of normality.
It ignores other unspoken motives of that few, of which we know some because they come to WEF and tell us about it every year.
And with every powerful tool in the hands of good people, will do great things. In the hands of bad people, can do bad things.
I mean, essentially, it just ignores entirely the reality we find ourselves in altogether.
We're going to have supervision.
It's just not even an honest conversation that's being had at this point.
The UN. No joke.
The panopticon is anywhere and eventually so built in and automatic that it's everywhere.
Maybe it's enough that we think we're constantly being watched.
Under such a pervasive system, nowhere is free. The feeling of being under constant surveillance, it's being gradually brought in so that it won't be as conscious of a thought. They try to make it a little less conscious in your mind, but it's still going to be there. This feeling of always being watched everywhere you go. It gets inside of people's heads and it changes them. It's beyond mere demoralization or learned helplessness. It conquers people. It's a world where no one will ever quite be themselves again. And we've seen a lot of that anyway, because we're mediating everything through screens. We're filtering everything. We're correcting everything. But at the end of the day, this is exactly what George Orwell was warning us about in 1984. It's the exact thing. As the Electronic Frontier Foundation's Bruce Schneier wrote, too many wrongly characterize the debate as security versus privacy. The real choice is liberty versus control. Tyranny, whether it arises under the threat of foreign physical attack or under constant domestic authoritative scrutiny, is still tyranny. Liberty requires security without intrusion, security plus privacy. Widespread police surveillance is the very definition of a police state. And that's why we should champion privacy, even when we have nothing to hide. The plague-stricken town, traversed throughout with hierarchy, surveillance, observation, writing. The town, immobilized by the functioning of extensive power that bears in a distinct way over all individual bodies. This is the utopia of the perfectly governed city. The plague is the trial in the course of which one may define ideally the exercise of disciplinary power.